You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. You might not be too worried about bundling up this week, as the Bay Area is getting some record high temperatures. But since San Francisco's beginning, one winter warmer has been worn for function and fashion. Back in the early 20th century, San Francisco's streets were often a sea of hats. Rounded bowlers and pork pies, creased fedoras, tall top hats, wide-brimmed ladies' hats ornamented with flowers and birds. Today, though, the hat's popularity is a shadow of what it once was. And local hatters and milliners that once ran thriving businesses from their trade have all but disappeared. If you do see hats milling about town these days, most likely they're mass-produced in factories overseas. But there's at least one place where the local hat-making tradition carries on, behind a nearly 100-year-old storefront in the Richmond District. In this story from our archives, KLW's Ali Budner takes us to Paul's Hat Works, an old-fashioned men's hat shop, to meet the four young women who've taken up this almost forgotten trade.
When you walk into Paul's Hat Works, it's a bit like stepping back in time. The shop feels well-kept, warm, and decidedly old-fashioned, with wood counters and glass cases. There's an ornate yet functional metal cash register, an old record player, framed black and white pictures of people wearing hats, stacks of vintage hat boxes, and hats of every style hanging from brass hooks.
Do you want to try it on? Oh, yeah, the bow, actually. That's a custom bow, too.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it looks great. My name's Kirsten Hove, and I'm wearing a black fedora with a short, curled brim.
Kirsten is co-owner of Paul's Hat Works, which dates back to 1918. All the previous owners have been men, none of them named Paul. But as of 2009, this San Francisco institution has been run collectively by four women in their 20s. The friends-turned-co-workers make a good team. They each fulfill their own niche in their quest to bring back the hat.
So why are we bringing the hat back? Well, I think the hat is just as necessary as a pair of shoes. So I think it's a functional item first and foremost. My name is Olivia Griffin, and I'm wearing an Optimo.
Olivia and her three business partners are all wearing hats, each made right there in the shop. Abby Dwelly is another one of the hat makers.
I'm wearing a fedora.
And last but not least,
my name is Wendy Hawkins. I am a hat maker, and I'm wearing a bowler hat.
Someone joked once that it was called hatitude, so we always say that, like, the way in which you wear your hat.
Full house on Sunday.
A customer to Paul's Hat Works has just walked in the door to pick up an order, a refurbished hat that belonged to his late father.
He passed away 20 years ago, so I just found it in the old tack room, and I thought, oh, where do you have this hat? And looked at it and got the address up here, came up, wondered if they could do something with it. They said, oh, sure.
That's Urban Bernardo.
From Hanford, California. That's way down in Kings County. No hat shops down there.
Kirsten retrieves Urban's refurbished felt hat from a sliding cabinet behind the counter.
This was originally something that we would call like an open telescope or a loose pork pie.
Kirsten and her partners are dedicated to bringing back the old styles of hats, ones that used to be as common as today's baseball cap. Olivia says old-fashioned hats like the pork pie disappeared from fashion 40 to 50 years ago.
And there's a lot of theories as to why. JFK didn't wear a hat to the inauguration, and that was like a big deal, because before that, everyone else had. He left it in the car, apparently, and the hatting company that made his hat were furious.
Another hypothesis? Cars.
It's hard to wear a hat in a car, so the car thing is part of it.
Or?
In my opinion, hair kind of abolished the hats, and we've joked about, like, picketing outside of hair salons, like, and stuff like that.
Whatever the cause, people just don't wear hats like they used to. So you might ask yourself, why would anyone choose this line of business today? Well, when the women of Paul's Hat Works tell their story, they make it sound like it was a matter of fate. But, oddly enough, when they purchased the shop, none of the women knew how to make hats.
It's kind of scary to buy a business learning to do something that, or buying a business and not knowing how to do what it is that you're going to be doing. So, but a lot of us had a background in textiles, and Wendy had a background in running a business, and so it ended up being less scary than we thought.
For 6 months, the four women took a crash course in hat making with their predecessor, who'd run the shop for 30 years. Everything in the shop came with it. And that's really important because
you have to have very specific tools to make hats, and they're tools that aren't made anymore, which is part of why it's such a special and dying art. Like, you can't go to school to become a hatter because the tools just don't exist, and the people don't know how to do it anymore.
Making a new hat is a highly customized process. When designing a new hat for a customer, they use an ancient contraption called a conformature. It looks like a metal top hat with levers and knobs all around it. It measures the precise shape and size of a head.
People often are like, oh, it looks like a medieval torture device. But then they're like, oh, that feels kind of nice. It's like a little bit of a head massage.
It's cold and it's very relaxing.
Kendon Anderson is a customer here. He's purchasing an Optimo, a hat with a thin raised spine down the center. Wendy removes a paper card with holes punched out from the conformature to reveal the shape of Kendon's head.
No one's head is the same shape. It's like a snowflake or a fingerprint.
The workshop, a tiny but neat room just behind the storefront, is where the hat really starts to take shape.
Hats, before they're hats, we call them bodies. You can also call them raw bodies or blanks, but we usually refer to them as bodies, which means before they have a shape in them. Basically, hats are made with steam. Like, steam is what makes a hat. It gives its shape. And then wooden blocks. Like, those are the two main tools.
Next, the hatters bind the brim and stitch in a lining. They can adorn the hat with ribbon and feathers, and voila! It's a bowler, an Optimo, a top hat, pork pie, Panama, or a fedora.
The fedora is the most popular, most common, looks good on almost every single person. The fedora is a gateway hat. Once you get the fedora, then you want to try a bowler, then you want to try a pork pie, then you want to try something else. So I think that it's the gateway hat to having a lot more hats.
Beware the gateway hat. It could easily turn into a pricey habit. The cheapest new hat from Paul's Hatworks is $250, and some are as high as $2,000. Now, that might seem over the top when you consider you could get a similar-looking hat for less than $100 at any store on the street today. But consider Wendy's approach.
I do basic math with people at the register. I'm like, how much did you spend on your laptop, on your cell phone, on your car? How long will that last you? 2 years, 5 years, 10 years if you're lucky and you don't drive that often? This hat will last you 80 to 150 years. So yes, it's $600, but divide that over how many times you'll wear it, over your lifetime, and then it's an heirloom for your family, and that's priceless.
So what's their vision for the future?
This is the groundbreaking for the Midwinter's Fair in Golden Gate Park, August 24th, 1893. And the only man in the whole photograph not wearing a hat is the mayor, who took off his hat to make a speech. And that's our goal. That's our goal, is to have everybody in a hat.
And after spending some time with the women of Paul's Hatworks, I have a feeling they could make it happen. If these merry hat makers have their way, they'll be bringing back not only hats, but also an appreciation for what is handmade, with heart, and of course, hatitude. For Cross Currents, I'm Allie Budner.